It's the American way. Oh, it's the British way. We're talking a Muppet Christmas Carol. Hit it. It was 1992. The space shuttle Endeavour began its maiden voyage. The Cartoon Network debuted. Windows 3.1 and Microsoft Works were released. And Kermit and the Gang teamed with Michael Caine to show us that a miser can change his ways. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me is a very special guest. You'll know him as the host of the Film Feast podcast, Matt Bledsoe. Matt, how's it going?
It's good, Jerry. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really enjoy your podcast, and so I'm glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to talk some Christmas stuff. It should be fun.
Yeah. Well, I know one of your tagline essentially is kind of, you know, you get to feast on these films. And what is your like experience and history of with the Muppets in general and this movie in particular?
I feel like the Muppets have been around, you know, as long as I can remember. I was born in 87, so I'm a late 80s baby. So
that's okay.
And I feel like, you know, you got pictures of me at my second birthday party with like Kermit the Frog on the cake, and you know, they just always, you know, I have stuffed animals, and I just always love the Muppets. I mean, who doesn't? And yeah. Exactly. And this version of A Christmas Carol, I don't remember even when I first saw it. I mean, it came out in 92, so I would have been five, and I just feel like I've always had it around. Mm-hmm. we had the tape forever and the DVD, and yeah, you know, so on and so on, and just constantly being watched. I'm sure I'll talk more about how much we watched it, but yeah, just, I mean, it's always kind of been in my life, so yeah.
Nice.
It's been, yeah.
Yeah, this one, it's definitely one of my favorites. So I was 12 when it came out. I mean, I've always loved the Muppets. I remember watching them in syndication. You know, the Muppet Show back when they had their own little, you know, variety show in the late 70s. And I mean, it's just, Muppets Take Manhattan was one of my favorites. And of course, Great Muppet Caper. So when I found out they were doing another one, I was all in. And sure enough, they didn't disappoint. It's hilarious. It's classic Jerry Jewell. Like, it's snappy. You know, there's so many visual gags as well. And it's just something that, I mean, it's classic Muppets, but at the same time, it kind of feels a little more fresh because it wasn't Jim anymore. It was his son, Brian, that was taking over the directing duties. But yeah, this is like the first Muppet film I remember without like my Muppets. So this is when, you know, Steve Whitmire took over for Kermit and you know, all that. So it was definitely, different, but it still had that Muppets flair.
Yeah. It's funny because I know, you know, this was the first one without Jim Henson that they did. And, you know, he'd the voice of Kermit and Steve Whitmire took over. I'm deaf in one ear. So maybe I'm not hearing it as much. I barely hear a difference between the two of them. especially when I was a little kid, I didn't know there was any difference. So I still think he does a great job. I think they did a good job without Jim Henson. I thought, maybe I'm wrong, maybe you know, but I thought he worked on this maybe a little bit before his death. I don't know if he worked on any of it.
No, he did. As far as I know, he didn't. Yeah, it was. In fact, it was right upon his death when they, you know, were debating whether or not to continue the Muppets, and they all kind of agreed that it was essentially, you know, it was his legacy, but it was also theirs, and mm-hmm. so they decided to press forward, and they didn't know what to do though, and so it was the their talent agent, what's his name, Farber, I believe, Faber. Bill Haber, that's what it is, excuse me. And he essentially said, hey, the Christmas Carol is like the greatest story. Why not do that? And so then they thought, yeah, let's do it. And so as far as I know, he didn't really have anything to do with, although he did do a Christmas special with the Muppets as well. But that was mm-hmm. like from the 70s, I think, like 1972 or 74, around there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of those where you can tell that they were trying to honor his legacy and stick to it as close as it could. And yeah, Steve Whitmire does a great job.
Yeah. I guess I could tell you why this one is so special to me is, you know, I've seen Muppet, The Great Muppet Caper. I've seen Muppet Take Manhattan, but I will talk about the 10 or so tapes at my grandpa's house, because me and my sister stayed at my grandpa's house every day after school. My mom was working and he had no cable. In the 90s, he had like, we had to work the antenna to get like five channels. And we had like 10 VHS tapes that were there that became like special movie sets, because we just watched them over and over and over. And this was one of them. Mm-hmm. So this movie became a movie we watched just all year round anyway, because, well, right, what are we going to watch? Oh, let's go through the tapes. Ah, I feel like watching Muppet Christmas Carol. So nice. That's why this one really has a special place in my heart, because we just watched it so much. And usually nowadays I'm somebody who's pretty strict on like, all right, we watch Christmas stuff, maybe in November, but mostly in December. But this one I made the exception for, and we'll watch any time of year, especially when I was a kid. It was like, be like June, we'd throw it on and just, you know, have a great time.
Funny you say that, because I'm actually, I'm that way about this one as well. I can watch it any time of year. It doesn't matter. In fact, I work at a Christmas store. And so we kind of take like a little hiatus from about late March, early April, all the way until the 4th of July. And so, of course, we come back like early May, and then we redo our displays and everything. But during that time, I have like, you know, 4 weeks off or so, 4 or 5 weeks off of just vacation time. And so I often find myself just kind of bored and like, what should I watch? Just flipping through the channels and, you know, and, oh, Muppet Christmas Carol. Yeah, let's put that on and, you know, use it sometimes to fall asleep too. Sometimes I'll just put it on because I want to laugh. And it is, there's something real special about it, because I think everybody knows A Christmas Carol. It's like one of those stories that is just classic. And then the Muppets are just, they're funny and they're lovable. And so, you know, you can't go wrong with the Muppets. So
it's one of those things I feel like on paper, someone might see, well, that doesn't sound, who has that going to turn out? But when you see it executed, you're like, wow, this seems perfect. Like there's Muppets perfectly cast to parts where it's like, you're like, oh yeah, this makes perfect sense.
Well, it's funny you said that, because originally it was going to be more of a parody. And so depending on if you ask Jerry Jewell or if you ask Brian Henson, they kind of have a different memory on it, but I guess both Robin and Scooter were considered for the Ghost of Christmas Past. Miss Piggy was going to be Christmas Present, and then either Animal or Gonzo were considered to be Christmas Future or Christmas Yet to Come.
I read that. I'm glad they didn't go that way with it. I like that those ghosts are special. Like, they made them for the movie. Two of them are very creepy. We'll talk about that. It's funny because the first one of Christmas Past, I don't think it's supposed to be creepy, but I think I find it creepier than the Ghost of Christmas to Come, which looks like the Grim Reaper.
And I think that was the whole point of, in the original story, that, you know, he's supposed to kind of look like that and, you know, ultimately scare Scrooge straight. But you're right. It's something about that, the Muppet hand that they use is, it's, if they had made it a skeleton hand, I don't think it would have been as creepy as the hand that they actually use.
He's very creepy. And I think there's a funny line with Rizzo where he's like, is this too scary for the kids or something? Because Gonzo and Rizzo are narrating the whole thing, or kind of walking through the whole thing, which I think is one of my favorite parts of the movie, that they have these little funny bits and they kind of guide you through the whole thing. And that part, they're like, listen, guys, we'll see you at the end. Goodbye. We're getting out of here.
Well, and even earlier in the movie, they say something similar like that, where he's like, oh, this, you know, or can you think the kids can handle it? And he said, oh, you know, it's culture.
It's a classic novel. It'll be fine.
Exactly.
And that Ghost of Christmas Past is like that creepy little baby doll thing, which for some reason as a kid, even creepy.
I think especially after The Shining and Poltergeist, I think just, you know, any kind of little kid, and even like a scary, like even if it's just a little bit scary, they're automatically like a million times more creepy than like, you know, Freddy or Jason or, you know. for sure. And although how they made that one was really cool, you know, they filmed it essentially in like a water tank. And I mean, I just thought that whole process was really neat. It's like all practical, which is so cool. Because nowadays you would just computer animate it and be done with it.
All CGI, but it looks really good. It does look cool now that I'm older. It doesn't scare me anymore, but it has a very cool, very ghostly look, you know, so.
It is. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess everybody knows the plot of A Christmas Carol. Yeah. But like you mentioned before, one of the special things was that instead of making Gonzo the Ghost of Christmas Future, you know, with like, you know, just the hood and then his nose kind of sticking out, which that kind of would have been a funny image, but they made him Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
A blue furry Charles Dickens with a partner for a rat or something like that. It's so great. But he's like omniscient and he's the storyteller. And I read that 95% of his dialogue was actually taken from the novel, which I thought was also an amazing bit.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that this stays fairly close to the novel besides, you know, we're using Muppets, but otherwise it's actually fairly close.
It really is, yeah. Yeah, you know, throw in a Sam Eagle here and there and you're all right. You're fine. Yeah. Which, before we move on, I got to say, who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh man, that's tough. I feel like it's a boring answer, but it's probably Kermit.
Mine too, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's how I am with most. If you tell me to pick who's your favorite of whatever, it's probably like the boring leader type. So
that's
like,
me too. My brothers make fun of me for that
because I like Leonardo and the Ninja Turtles.
Leonardo,
like, he's boring.
Lion-O.
Cyclops and X-Men.
Cyclops is my favorite too.
See, all right. Yep. He was a hero for kids with glasses, I tell you.
He sure was, especially if you were like a little scrawny kid, you know. I mean, they called him Slim. That was me.
I know. Oh, and Captain America. That's the, you know, all those kind of guys. They're like straight arrow leader
Duke,
type guys.
Yeah. Yep. I understand. I feel you. Yeah. Kermit was always my favorite, although it's a pretty close second between Fozzie and Gonzo.
I really like Fozzie.
He's just, he tries so hard.
I feel like I was a joker in my family as a kid, so I liked Fozzie a lot because I thought he's the comedian of the group, and I feel like I'd go around going waka waka.
Yeah. Randomly, when my daughter was only a few months old, I'd just go hiya 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 hiya, you know, like that to her. she'd just love it and crack up. But so one of the things that is different about this one is that while the Muppets have always had human interactions, you know, they did on the Muppet Show, they did in their other movies, the main character of this was actually a human instead of a Muppet. And so that was Michael Caine. So this was like the very first movie where that really kind of happens. And I really enjoy Michael Caine's Scrooge. I think he's one of my top Scrooges, you know, and there have been some great Scrooges, but for me, he's really good in this. And I think it's because he plays it straight. He plays it as if he's, you know, in the theater doing it, you know.
Yeah, and I was going to let you finish because I don't want to sound like I'm being hyperbolic. I think he's amazing in this movie. I think he's really good. Yeah. And there's a great quote about how he told Brent Henson, he's like, I'm not going to play this like I'm talking to puppets. I'm going to play it like I'm playing with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I won't wink. I won't smile at these things. I'm going to play it straight as I can. It comes across. It really elevates the whole thing to like a whole other level than anybody else would play it to.
It really does. Yeah. And I don't know if anyone else could have done it because he walks that fine line between nasty and jolly. You know, he can be snarky. He can be, you know, just dignified. But in this one in particular, you know, he captures really the essence of Scrooge, that just cold, calculating meanness. And so when you see his flip, it's really good. And then the fact that, you know, there are Muppets there just makes it better.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough part because you have to be so unlikable for, you know, the first half basically, and you got to slowly chip away at it. And by the end, do this great flip where you're like the happiest, jolliest guy. And he pulls it off all completely at the end. You're totally in, you buy it all, you know, he's so good. Yeah. That's why I always think, I still say it's my favorite version of A Christmas Carol. I have a friend who argues me all the time because he loves the, I think the George C. Scott version the best.
Oh, really? And, that's an interesting one.
My friend Ken, who's been on my podcast, we go back and forth and we argue. And I say, Ken, is your version have Muppets? No, then your version is not superior.
It's already inferior. That's
it's already inferior. I got Michael Caine. I got Muppets. I win. So yeah, I really do mean that's my favorite one. I haven't seen every version. I've seen a few, but this one is just, it hits right how I want to hit, you know, this version to hit, you know, the story to hit. So,
and it, for me, it's definitely right up there. It's if it's not number one, it's only because of my mood at the time. So most of the time it is my favorite version. Sometimes it's Scrooged. I really love Scrooged with Bill Murray.
I have a huge confession. I've never seen Scrooge all the way through.
I love that one.
This year I'm going to rectify that.
I don't want to play it up, you know, and get your expectations so high. So yeah, it's okay.
Okay. I mean, I love Bill Murray since I was a little kid in Ghostbusters, but I don't know why I haven't, it's one of those movies, I don't know why I haven't seen it. I've seen parts on TV.
Yeah.
I've never sat down and watched it from beginning to end, but I will this year. I'm going to make it a point to do it.
Well, it's, yeah. And I really do. And it was like his first role after like a 4-year hiatus. So he's, you can tell he's still kind of unsure. And then apparently the script was like butchered to death. Like it was supposed to be a great script. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Scrooge.
Yeah, sorry.
Although we are here to talk about Scrooge. So yeah, it's the typical story. You know, Scrooge is visited by the ghosts and he becomes a good person. That's the nutshell version of it. But it's done so well. And I love the way it starts off in typical Muppet fashion with a musical number. And it's catchy. All these songs are written by Paul Williams. They're all catchy songs. It's one of those where, in fact, I have several of these on my Christmas playlist.
Some great music in this. And I'm not somebody who's a big fan of like musicals in general. For some reason, I can accept,
I'm not either, yeah.
I can accept musicals when they're done by like cartoons and Muppets. But if it's like real people, it's all, you know, like a real old school musical. It's not my thing. But this one I can accept. And there's some really good, yeah, there's some really good songs in here.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's just the Muppets themselves and all the motion. I mean, there's great rhymes in it, you know, no cheeses for us Mises.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's these little bits like that, that they're just amazing. And they're classic Paul Williams, but at the same time, it just feels like it fits right in with the Muppets and his style. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
So yeah, I really like that. But we get the, you know, the cold wind blows and it chills, you know, chills you to the bone or whatever. But we see Scrooge walking past and everyone just kind of gets quiet and but there's a great joke about that was a fine meal, you know, some pigs talking. There's a lot of just little good bits like that if you're paying attention, and I was like, well, what should we do now? Oh, let's have lunch, you know.
Yeah.
it's like, wait, you just ate. But there's, yeah, just it's typical of that, the whole Muppet ethos, and it builds the tension, and then it kind of breaks a little bit, but then it builds it up again. It's so that it doesn't go too dark, which I kind of appreciate. And even though, you know, I do like a good dark telling of a Christmas Carol, I don't know if it's because I was 12 when I saw it. I don't know if it's just because Muppets are in it, but something about them actually easing the tension every once in a while, just it really worked for me.
Yeah, no, it's good. I think it walks that fine line between, it's got enough jokes, but it also takes it seriously. It's not a complete goof, you know. It respects the material. But yeah, they give you those breaks where it gets a little dark and they bring it back. You know, it really plays it well right down the middle.
Yeah, well, and especially with Rizzo and Gonzo. I mean, they have some of the best bits in the entire thing.
Yeah, I love when Rizzo drops in a bottle, a bucket of water, turns into like an icicle, and yeah. Gonzo has to smash him against a wall and unfreeze him.
Yeah, they had a lot of really good ones where, you know, it's like, oh, wait, my jelly beans. And he goes through the bars after climbing over the entire gate and falling and hurting himself. And he's like, you could fit through those bars? Yeah. You are such an idiot. Yeah, their interaction was, I think, the best part of the whole film.
Yeah, I might agree with you. Besides Michael Caine's kind of transformation at the end, I think that's really well done.
Yeah,
but yeah, and their interaction. That's me and my sister's favorite bits when we were little kids, was their little back and forth banter. Mm-hmm. It plays well for kids, I think.
Yeah, it really does. Of course, Kermit is cast as Bob Cratchit, which, I mean, what else would you expect?
Yeah.
So of course, Miss Piggy is his wife. And then Robin plays his son, which I always thought was kind of odd because he's his nephew. But, you know, he plays his son, so it's okay.
I always thought it was odd that they had two pig daughters and a frog son. It's like, I don't want to ask how this worked. But
two frog sons.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the other one.
Peter, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's.
I don't want to get into the genetics of how that.
That's a whole biology lesson there. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, who else? It's like when you see the casting, you're like, oh, of course, that person, or that Muppet's that person. And yeah. I think maybe the most on-brand cast, even though they had to break the character into two people, was Statler and Waldorf as the Marleys.
Yes.
Which is so perfect. It's like, yeah, of course.
And their song is great. But in general, just the whole heckling bit was I mean, you know, they're hecklers. That's what they do. And so it's perfect.
So good. Yeah.
And of course, Fozzie was a Fezziwig, which of course they named him Fozziwig in this, which, yeah.
Yeah, of course. That one worked too.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I love Sam Eagle as his headmaster.
I love that you did that line at the top. That was I love that. I laughed so hard for some reason this time, but it's like the American way. And they whisper in the British way.
It's the British way. Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, I mean, because Sam Eagle is like so quintessential, the straight-laced, you know, he tries to teach them all how to be prim and proper. And so casting him as the headmaster was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just everyone, you're right. Everyone was like the perfect cast for it. I do love his nephew Fred as well. I don't recall the gentleman from anything else, but...
Me neither. He reminded me of somebody, and now I forgot who it was because I didn't write it down. But he's got a good energy. He's got a bounce in his step, which he's supposed to have. You know, he's very a happy guy, and Scrooge is not. So,
yeah. And then, of course, finally, we come to Bunsen and Beaker as the money collectors for the poor, the alms collectors, I suppose it's called. And so, there are also some of my favorites as well. And I like, you know, when they're, you know, they come in, they're asking for money, and then Fred comes in and he goes through his whole thing and he gets out. But I love how Bunsen just kind of, he's resting his hand, face in his palm, and he just is kind of drumming on the desk, you know, so.
I love at the beginning how everybody's so scared to go anywhere near Scrooge or ask him anything. It's all very funny how nobody wants to approach him about anything, about getting day off work on Christmas, about getting more coal. he's just very scared in the beginning.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and then so they expand his employees from Bob Cratchit to, you know, a bunch of other mice, and it's right. All the mice from the Muppet Take Manhattan. And, you know, they're like pushing Kermit, you know, as Bob to go ask him for more coal. And he's like, well, you know, how would you like to celebrate, you know, Christmas or whatever in the unemployment line? And so they're like, heat wave. They're all dressed in tropical gear.
Kane does that a couple times in the beginning where he does the thing where he starts out quiet and then yells the last line or like the last couple words.
Yes, he does a few times.
Which is great because everyone just jumps and gets scared and runs away.
Well, but I love Kermit's angle, you know, when he's like, you know, he's trying to get the day off for Christmas. And he's like, you know, all the other businesses will be closed. There'll be nobody to do business with.
Yep. Smart strategy. It's good.
That's exactly right. He's like, fine, take the whole day.
And of course, he's like, be back, like, you know, even earlier the next day.
Exactly.
Also, yeah. I love how when the minute Scrooge leaves the night, they start throwing the party. Kermit and everybody start throwing like a party, and you can hear them celebrating as soon as he walks out the door.
Yeah, it's a nice little song that they kind of sing, and I mean, it's great. But the whole thing, that whole opening, I love the colors. They keep it kind of drab. They keep it, you know, very that era of London, you know, Victorian. I mean, it's just everything about it is, it's like spot on. And it reminds me of like the other real adaptations. And I think, again, like you said, that's why it works, because they took it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so we were introduced to Fred in the usual way. He, you know, invites him to Christmas dinner and he's like, no, whatever. And he turns down Bunsen and Beaker, that whole thing. And so then we get the classic, you know, okay, he's walking home and he gets home and he, you know, the door knocker and all that stuff, and goes upstairs, and then we get the Marleys. And this is, you know, I don't want to go too detail in it because everybody knows a Christmas Carol, but at the same time, you know, I want to make sure I hit everything. But we get like one of the greatest song that's so catchy and
so catchy. Yeah, I'm still thinking about it right
now. And Marley. Avarice and greed. And but it's choreographed very well. I mean, just everything about it. And of course they're heckling him. And I love the music is so great, you know. Hey, what is he talking about? Remember that time we evicted all those orphans? And
yeah, just being the most evil people they could be, the most horrible men.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were standing outside with their frostbitten teddy bears, and you know, all these classic lines. But, you know, and then right away they laugh, you know, the ho, 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 that classic Statler and Waldorf laugh. And then they're just, oh, and you can see they're like guilt over it, which is you don't expect to see from Statler and Waldorf. It's so good. But so they, you know, they tell him, hey, you're going to be visited by three ghosts. And be ready, essentially.
Yeah, I think the first one comes at the strike of one, and then, yeah, there you go.
yeah, that's right. But Gonzo, expect the first bell at or the ghost when the bell strikes one or something. He like yells it out, and it's just amazing. And so then we get that creepy little girl Muppet that you talked about. Yeah, she is. I like her. Of course, I think Christmas Present is like my favorite Muppet. Just everything.
Yeah, about same him, here.
So jolly and happy. But she's she uses a lot of the lines again straight from the book, where he's like, what business do you have here? And she's like, your welfare. And then he says something like, well, a good night's sleep would have been better for my welfare. She's like, well, your salvation then. I mean, it's just it's like so perfect. And the fact that she's flowing, because they filmed it in water. And so her gown is kind of like bobbing through the waves, and it makes it so much eerier.
Mm-hmm. And I love that line. Some of her line, the way that they're said are great. I just like the line, like, with the touch of my hand, you will fly.
Yeah. I'm mortal and liable to fall. it's so great. And I love how when they're about to take off and Gonzo has like a grappling hook.
Oh yeah.
A great bit. He like spins it and throws it and catches the hem of Scrooge's robe. And so he and Rizzo are like holding on to it. It's another one of those bits, like the whole time he's like, I'm telling you, storytellers know everything. And and so there's all these different bits with Gonzo and Rizzo where Rizzo doesn't quite believe him. But he's like, the light's going to turn on now or something. And it does. And he's like, well, hoity toity, Mr. Godlike.
I think everybody would know that they are, no one's seeing them, obviously. They're, they're hanging on to Scrooge's pants, but there's no addressing them. No one sees them.
Yeah, exactly. The story. Yeah. But I love that when they actually get to the past, it's like the old schoolyard where he grew up, but they land there and the cat sees Rizzo.
Oh, yeah.
And immediately starts like chasing him. But that's another one of my favorite bits. It's so funny. But we see, of course, Scrooge is a child, and he's there with Sam Eagle as his headmaster. And I love how we get that close up of the busts of like Aristotle and Galileo and all these famous people. And then it's just Rizzo and Gonzo. Sitting on the shelf.
The shelf collapses, I think. Right, collapses.
Well, he even says something like, you'll build yourself a foundation as strong as a schoolhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And then the shelf collapses. And he's like, I've been meaning to fix that. It's like so Sam Eagle. I really love this movie. This is one of my favorites. And it's like this for me, this is one that if I don't see it at Christmas time, it doesn't feel like Christmas.
Oh yeah. 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 I've got that list too of like, I don't know how many, like 5-10 movies that I must see at Christmas. Some I want to see, but there's must sees or otherwise it's just not even Christmas. So.
Exactly. Yeah. For me, also the Rankin Bass specials with Rudolph.
Oh, yeah.
And Frosty and yeah. but this for sure is one of them. And I think it's because you're right. I remember, so much just growing up with it. I remember, I don't remember a Christmas without it essentially. But of course we fast forward to where he's an apprentice at Fezziwigs or Fozziwigs.
Oh yeah.
And they're throwing the Christmas party. He meets Belle. And we get the he falls in love with Belle and that whole thing. But there's another lot of really funny bits where like Gonzo and Rizzo they're like lamp lighting. They're lighting the lamps. Yep.
Oh, this is one of my favorite parts.
He accidentally sets Rizzo's tail on fire.
It's like, of course, we get light the lamp, not the rat,
Yeah.
Which I can't say too fast.
I know, it's hard to say, man. I don't know how long he did it, but put me out. And so he just like pushes him.
And he's frozen. There's so many little quick bits of comedy in this, like either background gags or little quips or something happening, like physical gags. Like they're just throwing jokes at you, almost nonstop till they take a moment to like be serious every once in a while. But it's just coming at you fast and furious.
yeah, exactly. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the Airplane, like the Zucker Brothers.
Nonstop movies. Gags,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one thing after another. Yeah. And so we get a lot of that. And then I think we see the Swedish Chef in there.
Oh yeah.
And Electric Mayhem is playing they're like the house band.
Right.
It's so funny. And then, you know, Fozzie Wig gives his speech. He's like, thank you all for coming and Merry Christmas. And of course the Marley brothers kind of heckle him. Right. They're like, it was pointless. It was short. We love it. Yeah. Well, yeah, he meets Belle. He falls in love. You can tell it's going to be a whole thing. And then again, we fast forward to my least favorite part of the movie, which is her song.
Oh, that's so funny. That's my least favorite part too.
And yeah,
it's bad. I mean, I feel bad because it's a sad scene. Really well. Yeah. I mean, she sings well. It's a sad scene. I feel it's the sad, emotion of it. I'll probably talk more about it later when we get to some of the end parts that you have, you know, like your end bits. It'll probably come up again, but they are not my two favorite actors. They don't have to do too much. Young Scrooge and Belle.
Yeah.
There's a huge, I don't know if it's controversy, but about they got her song cut from several versions of this movie.
Yeah. The theatrical version. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was like Disney chairman at the time, I think hated the song and wanted it pulled because he was like, kids aren't going to like this. And it's funny because the version I grew up with, I feel like it had it. Yeah, because it says the scene was restored in VHS.
For VHS, yeah.
First DVD. So I grew up with it. And then it was jarring when it was taken out because it's like on TV and Disney Plus. They don't ever have
it. They don't show it, yeah.
The scene is very jarring without it because it just jumps from like...
It just jumps, yeah.
She has like one line where she's like, I don't think I'm in love with you anymore. And then snap. And it's like the whole song, you see older Scrooge kind of breaking down and kind of really regretting this. You don't get any of that when they cut the song. So I can kind of see both sides almost. Cause I could think you might think this is probably too much for kids or it's too sad, but when you cut the whole song, you lose so much.
You really do. I mean, and Michael Caine acts the heck out of it. And like you were right. saying, so it's just, there is something missing, you know? But it's very poignant. And so then when we hear it again towards the end, but in a different slightly version, when you have it in there, it really kind of connects. And so now there's that through line, even more apparent. But at the same time, it is kind of even though it's beautiful, it's a gorgeous song, but it's still kind of boring.
Yeah. The scene's kind of boring. I mean, the song, I remember as a kid, I can't remember if I liked it. It was just kind of part of the movie, but I think I would kind of want to skip that part. If I was a kid, I was like, let's just get to the next, get more funny stuff. You know?
Yeah. And that's how I was. It was like, all right. So I remember I would tune out for that part and then, oh, okay, there we are again. But, that's probably my least favorite part of the movie there. But at the same time, you're right. You kind of need it in because then you see Scrooge's breakdown. That's when he's, you know, like don't, you know, like no more, you know. And
oh yeah,
and
yeah,
she has that great line of these are reflections or whatever, the shadows of the past, you know, that they are what they are, don't blame me, kind of a thing. And
yeah, those ghosts can be pretty cold about what they're showing.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, she's like,
don't blame me, guy. It's like, yeah, you did
this is you, you know, it's all you. Well, yeah, so he's back in his bed and then we get my favorite ghost. I love this ghost. He's so fun. He's so and funny and, you know, come in and know me better, man.
He's got a horrible short-term memory.
Yes.
He says he lives in the present.
Ghost. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, I really like him. He's very jolly.
He really is. Yeah. He's definitely one of my favorites. And, you know, he's like, I am the ghost of Christmas present. You know, did I already tell you that? And you know, he's like, yeah, you did. His reaction's so great. But yeah, he's like, my favorite line, I think, out of the whole movie is, you know, you're a little absent-minded spirit. He's like, no, I'm a large absent-minded spirit.
Oh yeah, that stuff's fun. He's so fun. It's a nice break after the sadness of the what we just saw. You know, it's like,
exactly.
Oh, yeah. Okay, we can cheer up a little bit.
yeah, and so he takes him, of course, to see his his nephew, and he takes him to see Bob Cratchit's house, and this is where we see Tiny Tim for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, such a meager feast, and he's like, but very, you know, very much cherished, or something like that.
Yeah,
and. But I love it because he says, you know, here's Bob Cratchit's house. And he's like, how did you know that? He's like, well, you just told me. He's like, well, I'm usually trustworthy. I mean, this is one of those where it's so quotable. You know, I've seen it a million times, and I never quote movies this much, but I love this movie.
I mean, there's so many good quotes. Yeah.
And of course we see Tiny Tim, and he, you know, the God blesses everyone, and you know that, or not the God blesses everyone yet, but he, you know, he tells him that at church he was so good that, you know, that he hoped the people would see him so that they would know who made, you know, blind men see and beggars, you know, the lame walk and things like that. And so Scrooge, you can see he's already starting to get a little bit touched, and he's like, yeah. Which I thought, again, another great bit.
Yeah, breaking down those icy walls around his heart.
Mm-hmm. And so they also go to see the nephew Fred. And of course they play the game, and you know, they play it. What is it? Yes or no, I think is the name of the game.
Yes, I believe so. So yeah, it's like,
I think we call it like 20 questions nowadays.
Yeah. Is it like, is it a man? Yes. You know, and then they go down the line until you figure out who the person they're talking about is. It's basically a roast of Scrooge at that
pretty
point.
Much. Yeah. Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But you know, at the same time, I think he kind of deserves it.
Oh, he does. He does. But it's hard to hear those things about yourself when people aren't, you're not around. But yeah. And Fred seems like such a nice guy. I think that probably hurts him more because Fred seems so nice, and he's his only relative, and he's still talking crap about him.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
But I think he's already starting to see like, yeah, I've made a lot of mistakes. So
yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, but then we kind of get that cool dissolve, you know, and mm-hmm. And you know, he's like, spirit, you know, because the present is so fleeting, he grows old really fast, and so his hair's turning gray, and you know, it's just, it's one of those where we get, you know, he's like, you know, next is the ghost of Christmas, you know, the yet to come, and you know, go in and know him better, man.
I feel like that always made me sad as a kid when the ghost of Christmas present became old and was gone really quick. But
yeah, me too.
He's so nice, and it's like, oh, he's gone. I think he has a line when he first meets him that he has like 10,000 brothers or something.
Oh, yeah. Because
you know, it's like there's constantly new ones, I think, every day or something. So yeah, it always bummed me out. I was like, oh no, he's gone. Then it goes into real scary territory with the ghost of Christmas yet to come.
Yeah, yeah. And so much so that the, you know, Gonzo and Rizzo check out.
Yeah, they just bail. They're like, we'll see you guys at the end.
Yeah, we'll see you guys at the end, yeah.
I like there's a little kind of like, you know, there's fourth wall breaking stuff, but it's not like so over the top in your face, you know what I mean? It's like, it works. Like the little, like, you know, we'll see you guys at the end of the movie type thing. You know, it's a movie, but yeah, it's just, it's funny, so it works.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then of course when they do come back, they're like, we're back. It's like, we promised we would.
Yeah.
Oh man. But yeah, so they see the what is it, old Joe and you know, I can't remember, the charwoman and all that. Mm-hmm. You know, they took his bed sheets, and he's like, hey, these are still warm. He's like, I don't pay extra for the warmth. And of course, she, you know, she's like, you should, it's the only warmth he had or whatever. So there's, yeah, it's again, it's kind of lighthearted and funny. They're snickering at his expense, but
yeah.
You know, he's starting to be like, oh, okay, who's this person they're talking about? And not quite. I mean, he's slowly putting two and two together, but not quite.
Yeah. Not quite. I, even as a kid, I was like, yeah, man, it's you. Come on, figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's you. It's like, yeah. Who else?
He probably just didn't want to admit it, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. But yeah, that ghost, I mean, it's like that creepy, like pale bluish, grayish hand. Just, ooh, that got me every time.
Yeah, it's very scary. You can't see. It's just black under the hood. There's no face. Mm-hmm. He doesn't speak. He just points. He's very creepy. He's not very comforting.
No, not at all. And of course, you know, they look at Tiny Tim and or you know, that he's gone, and they're all kind of sad. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, you know, kind of a thing. And then the whole grave, and I mean, it's the typical Christmas Carol ending. So yeah, you know, I mean, you've heard it a million times at this point, but the difference is just, you know, it's Michael Caine. and there have been some great Scrooges. I liked Patrick Stewart's Scrooge. You know,
he was good. Yeah, I don't remember much about that version besides him, but I remember him. I liked him as Scrooge. I like
Patrick
Stewart.
Same here. Yeah. you know, George C. Scott, of course, was a good Scrooge. What's his name? Alistair
Sim.
Yeah. Sims?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sim. He's another phenomenal Scrooge, but at the same time, I just, Michael Caine's version is just so good that when he, you know, he's, you know, he's like, no, please. And then all of a sudden just it's his bed curtains and he's back at home. And I mean, he's just so happy. it's great.
So good. Yeah. It's the warmth. I think the ending really brings it all home. I mean, in every version, but I just think the way he sells it at the end and the warmth he has from the other version I've seen, I feel like the other guys just don't have that. It's not the same, maybe the jolliness, the Christmas spirit. I really believe it in Michael Caine when he's really like, you know, he's like, I have so much to do. I have to do. He's running around. Like after he's back, he's like, I got to do this. I got to do that. He's so excited to be back and be alive.
Yeah.
I just love it. Yeah.
He gives the money to the, you know, Beaker and Bunsen.
Oh, you know, one of my favorite things is I do this for no reason any time of the year. So he throws the window open and he looks down at the bunny. I can't remember the bunny's name.
Bean Bunny.
Bean Bunny, thank you. And he's like, you there, boy. He's like, you know that giant turkey down at the market? He's like, here's how many shillings. Go buy that for me. And he's like, yes, sir. Or I think first he asked him, what day is it? He's like, it's Christmas Day, sir.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
At my old house when I was younger, kind of had this window you could throw open in my room and see people coming up. So everyone's, for no reason, it made me laugh. A friend was coming up, I throw the window open and just be like, you there, boy, what day is it? Just yell at my friend's like, shut up, you idiot. I'm like, I'm doing Christmas Carol. But yeah, I just love that. He's like, then it just starts. He's like, he gives the money for the turkey. Then he's like, I got to go see Bob Cratchit. I got to go see my nephew. It's just like, there's just that ending. If I could watch nothing else in the movie, I'd have to see at least from, you know, when he wakes up to the end and then I'm good for Christmas. That's like, that's the Christmas spirit to me right there.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. But I love that when he tells him, you know that turkey, you know, in the window or whatever, the prize goose or whatever it was. He's like, the one as big as me. He's like, that one. He's like, go buy it. He's like, be serious. Because earlier Bean Bunny was like a street urchin who was Christmas caroling for money. You know, he's like a penny.
Right.
Bunny, you know, he throws a wreath at him or something.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know, if you go, you know, super fast, then I'll even give you an extra, whatever, however much money. And so he like takes off. And so, yeah, I love that whole bit. It's just everything about it, his transformation. But of course he, you know, he meets Bunsen and Beaker and he's like, you know, I'm going to give you, you know, whispers it.
Yeah,
of course. And they're like, that much? And he's like, you know, there's a great many back payments, you know, in that. And so then Beaker, this is like one of my favorite parts. He gives him like his scarf. And he's like, for me, no one's ever given me a present. I mean, it's just like, wow.
And then he has the scarf on. He's just walking down the street singing that great song. And
Thankful Heart. Yeah.
Yes. It's very good. I love that musical number. And then they're just all kind of going and he's getting stuff and they're making their way to Bob. We don't know this yet. They're making their way to Bob Cratchit's house. And I'll let you pick it back up.
No, that's okay. Yeah. I love when he stops at his own shop and he has like just buckets of coal. And so that's another nice little touch there. His I guess money counters. I don't know what they're.
I think they're called money counters. I read a funny fact about that the producers and director didn't think about this. That so he gives them all coal and like a bunch of little kids saw the first screening and were like, were they bad? Because all they know is that you get coal for being bad.
You get coal, yeah.
They didn't know it was for heat, so they were like, are they bad? It's like no, it was for warmth. It was good. So, but yeah, he does that. It's great. I mean, he has all these little stops along the way. I'm blanking on a few of them, but yeah.
He stops at Fred's house. And,
right.
You know,
yep.
And I think he even gives his niece-in-law. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Yeah. I don't know how that works either. But you know, he even gives her like a kiss and they're just startled. Their expressions at that point.
Yeah. I think there's no dialogue. I think they're just doing the song and they have to look and they're just like, what the hell was that?
Exactly. Yeah.
Who was that man?
And then of course he stops at the crutches and he's like, you weren't at work today, you know, and therefore I'm going to give you I'm going to give Miss Piggy's like just mad at this point. I'm going to give you a piece of, you know, a piece of my mind or something. And, you know, and he's like, I'm going to raise your, and she interrupts you. I'll raise you right off the pavement.
I love that. Yeah. When she interrupts and she's like threatens him and then he comes in and she starts saying all the good stuff. Like, I'm going to give you a raise. She's like, but what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great ending. Of course, then they sing the reprise of When Love Is, instead of When Love Is Gone, it's I Think When Love Is Found.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And so it shows them all there, and even Scrooge's nephew is there, and you know, the old I love how he visits. He does visit his old headmaster and his old boss Fozziwig, and they have like the ear trumpets, and
they're both really old at this point. And I was like, they should be ancient because he seems pretty old.
He seems exactly. Yeah. I guess if we think of him only maybe as in his 60s, then
I think I looked it up this time because I never thought of how old he was, because I think I saw he turned 90 this year, and then he was about 59 or 60 when they shot this. So, you know, I think I thought he was a little older as a kid, but I was like, okay, that makes sense, about 60. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I always just kind of, I always just imagine Scrooge is like in his 60s.
Yeah, I might have thought of him as even older, because I feel like to me in my mind, they made him seem like he's like on death's door. You know, it's like he could die at any moment. So I think I thought he was older. I don't remember. And when I was a kid, people seemed so much older. So Michael Caine, I thought he was like in his 80s or something. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Because I know he apprentices Peter. Like, he helps him get a good apprenticeship. And then, of course, he's like a mentor to Tiny Tim. In the novel, you know, the way it ends, and which has that great line, who did not die, you know?
Oh yeah, I love I needed that as a kid, because oh my god, the Tiny Tim stuff like just broke my heart.
It's heavy,
sad, and like I see an empty chair and it's like just Tiny Tim's chair with a crutch, you know, he's passed away. That just killed me. My sister was little kids, I think we just were like, we don't want him to die, so, but we knew at the end he'd be fine. But I love how they're like, he did not die.
Yeah. Which is actually in the novel, you know, in the novella. But at the time, you know, I hadn't read it, and so it was just I always thought it was so funny, the thing. Oh man. But that's essentially the movie. There's not really a whole lot difference between the others, except for, you know, Gonzo is like the Greek chorus slash, you know, Charles Dickens. Other than that, it really is pretty straightforward of an adaptation. It's just, you know, a little jokes here and there.
Yeah, it's a very straightforward movie, and then it's not even very long. I don't think it's even an hour and a half. They get the song out. It's pretty short. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like 89 minutes. I think it's what it clocks in at, or something like that.
Yeah, and it feels like it flies by. I don't know if that's just because I've seen it so many times, but I think the pacing is really good. It just seems like it just moves, you know.
yeah. Well, apparently, people that they considered for Scrooge before they landed on Michael Caine, people that I'm not even sure who they are, but David Hemmings, Ron Moody, Peter O'Toole.
Okay.
So that's like a big name there. Mm-hmm. David Warner and George Carlin.
Oh my God. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, that's an odd choice there.
It is strange.
So I'm glad they settled for Michael Caine.
I can't imagine it being anybody else, honestly. And I don't know if anybody else would have taken it as seriously as he did, which I appreciate. So,
well, yeah, you're right. Exactly. There's a lot of little Easter eggs hidden. So there's several of the shops. There's like Micklewhites, which is you know, Michael Caine's real name, Maurice Micklewhite. So that was like a nod to him, which I thought was kind of cool. A few others here and there that were just kind of peppered in there if you're looking. And so I love how the Muppets always kind of do that thing. You know, they'll hide like little Easter eggs for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just got to look for them. So I got to ask, you know, what would you say, you know, it would be your happiest moment or memory of this movie here?
This was tough because, I've watched it for so long. Probably just my happiest memory would be, you know, looking back, just that we could watch it any time of year at my grandpa's house and just, you know, be in the Christmas spirit. that's the memories I have of it mostly. It's just watching as a little kid. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's July. Let's throw on this. And you know, now it's just, I mean, whenever I watch it, I'm in a good mood, I'm in the Christmas spirit, so
yeah.
Hard to pick just one, but yeah.
You're right, it is hard to pick just one. I think growing up, it would be watching it, you know, with my family.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately my all-time favorite happiest moment would be when I showed it to my daughter for the first time.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And she really liked it. You know,
that's good. That's good.
So funny. So, so yeah, now it's one that we watch every year, and along with a Muppet Family Christmas, and of course, you know, Home Alone and some of the others. But
oh yeah, yeah, Home Alone's a must for me too.
yeah, you gotta. It's Kevin McAllister.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just watching it with her, and of course, my son now. And I mean, I just, it's something special about it that, you know, you just, it's hard to explain, but it just, it feels like family. And you just, it feels close. And so my son's still a little bit scared because he's only four. And so he's still kind of scared of some of the parts there. But my 8-year old is, she really likes it.
She's, for a 4-year old, some of it can be kind of intense, honestly. So
yeah,
I get it.
Really can. Yeah. I know. And I actually debated for a while whether or not I should show it to him. But then I thought, well, Muppets, you know, so I think he'll enjoy it most of it. And he did. He really likes it. So, but now we come to my favorite part of the show, which is a little segment I like to call Gag Me with a Spoon. Mm-hmm. So this is where we do our best impression of our least favorite part of the movie here. And not necessarily something we hated, just our, you know, something we didn't like as much as everything else. Because for me, this one was really hard. But
yeah, me
I will
too.
In the end, I'll leave it up to the listeners and they'll vote, and the winner will get a totally rad Christmas sticker unless I win, in which case I get nothing. But I have not yet won, so I think you're pretty safe. I don't know if that means I'm just really bad at impressions or they just don't want me to
maybe they're just being nice to the guest. I don't know.
I don't feel super
confident in mine, but we'll see.
So as a guest, I'll let you go first, just kind of set up the scene and then take it from there.
Okay. Well, this was tough because I just gushed about this movie for like an hour and how much I love it and think it's fantastic. We both did agree, though. I'm not in love with the scene with young Scrooge and Belle out in like the frozen pond area. And they're not the worst actors, but not the best actors. And they're talking about, basically, they're both talking about kind of their future, and you know, she wants to get married and move on and move forward. And he's kind of like, but he's all about money and business. You know, that's his whole downfall. And I guess the one line, there's some lines back and forth I'm not a fan of, but the one that it's not even that bad a line, just the way he delivers it. It's like Scrooge says to her, "Business continues to be poor."
That was good. That was a good one. That's really good. And I love that line. I love the way he says it. Yeah. And she kind of, because when she responds, she kind of like flares her nostrils a little bit, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. And, it's really distracting now as an adult. But so mine is also from that scene.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do something I never normally do. I'm going to sing like a girl. And,
okay. It's exciting.
It's the song, you know, When Love Is Gone. And I'm going to butcher it terribly because I'm a tenor, but I cannot sing this high. So I'm going to go with falsetto and it's pretty bad. So let's see. I'm sorry, I'm getting embarrassed.
You want me to help? I can not look if that helps.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Let's see. When love is gone. When love is gone. I'm going to stop there. I can't.
That wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. Everybody give it up. That was good. It was funny because one quick story of that scene. We were watching that one Christmas. I was dating a girl at the time who was a very good singer. She was in the state choir in Virginia,
nice,
around here. And apparently, I don't know. Cause to me, I don't know anything about singing. She hated that girl's voice. She was like, this girl is a terrible singer. I don't hear it, but she was like, oh, I hate this. I don't know. But I thought you did a pretty good job.
Well, it's very breathy.
That's what she was saying. It's like very high. It's very breathy.
Yeah.
I can't sing at all. So good job.
Oh, well, thank you. I tried my best to match her. I don't know if I did, but I will let you listeners decide. Was it Matt or myself? And probably not myself.
I think it's funny we both picked from that same scene. I wonder if that's most people's opinion. But the scene's so short, though, that it's like, it's kind of done pretty quickly. If you cut the song out, it's especially quick.
You're
it's like
right.
2 minutes
or
something.
Just, and it is, it, you, like you mentioned, it really is jarring. It's because it's just such an abrupt cut.
Yeah, it's like she's gone. It's just like, you know, like, oh no, where'd she go? So
it continues to be poor.
I don't know. Good. It's the cadence. It's the
exactly. Yeah, it's very, yeah, like a almost like iambic pentameter. You know.
Yeah.
Oh man, you know, I gotta ask. So G.I. Joe, they taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think is the other half?
I wrote this with a question mark, so I'm not too confident, but I'll say to keep the spirit of Christmas in our hearts all year long.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's good. That's way better than mine.
Okay.
Mine is that if you want to tell a great story, have a sidekick rat.
I like that. That's good.
Matt, it's been a blast talking with you about this movie. It's one of my favorites, and it seems like it's one of yours too. What do you want to plug? What do you got coming up?
Well, I just started a movie podcast because I thought the world needed more of them. I thought there's a problem here. No, I just been listening to these movie podcasts for so long, and I just got to the point where I was like, I just want to talk about stuff because, you know, I just was like, I have all these ideas. So it's called the Film Feast Podcast. We talk about anything and everything. All October, we did all horror movies. Christmas or December, we're going to do some Christmas stuff. I mean, it's just kind of every week. You know, just open format, open conversation. It could be anything and everything every week. Action movies one week, comedy, you know. I just like to keep it whatever. I have all these great guests on, and we just talk about all kinds of movies. I just love it. So that can be found anywhere you get podcasts pretty much. It's the Film Feast Podcast. And if you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, it's just at Film Feast Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at MattBled87. And you can follow me and the podcast on Instagram at just Film Feast, all one word.
Right on. Yeah, definitely check it out. I loved your 1931 Dracula episode.
Oh, thank you.
That is one of my favorites. I'm a huge Universal Studios, you know, monster fan. So that was a great one. Which, by the way, I don't know if you got a chance to. I did Monster Squad like for Halloween.
Nice. I'm trying to make my way through a bunch of podcasts. I'm going to have to get back to that one.
Yeah, it was fun, but I got to talk with Sean Robert about it. And so we briefly mentioned how like it's really all the Universal classic monsters, you know, right, that are like the villains there. And so it was fun to talk about it. And so when I saw that you were doing it, I was like, yes, this is amazing.
That's good. I think I made the point on that podcast. I was like, I feel this movie's been talked about to death, but a few people reached out and said they liked it and said they thought we did a good job talking about it. And I thought, you know, I questioned if we should even do it, but I'm glad we did. So it was a lot of fun. We talked about some, I think some different stuff that doesn't get touched on. My friend Ken is a huge Universal Monster fan. He co-hosted mm-hmm. that one, and he had a bunch of good information. So it was fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And I really enjoyed it. So definitely check out Film Feast Podcast. On that note, let me just say again, thank you. And I'm going to end it with, it's in the singing of a street corner choir. It's going home and getting warm by the fire. It's true. Wherever you find love, you can check us out on our social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you're feeling like Scrooge on Christmas morning, leave us a review on iTunes. Not only does it help us reach more people, but you also get a free sticker. Now, don't forget to vote. Later, dudes.
Do you like podcasts about Christmas?
Uh-huh. Do you like podcasts about movies?
Uh-huh. Well, we have a podcast for you.
I'm intrigued.
I'm John.
And I'm Ben. And we're the hosts of Santa by the Minute,
the only podcast that breaks down 1985's Santa Claus the Movie 1 minute at a time.
The holiday classic starring John Lithgow.
It certainly should be.
Dudley Moore.
Isn't it self-explanatory? I'm an elf.
An elf?
Yes.
And David Huddleston.
Hold on tight and don't worry. You'll be as safe here as you are in your own home.
You won't want to miss as Ben and I talk about 1 minute of the movie every single week.
Stop! Are you insane?
We post a brand new episode every Wednesday, and every episode is...
For free!